You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about fostering positive sibling relationships. Here's some pictures. I tried to find pictures of my kids having positive interactions with each other. I really like the one of the three at the top playing in the band. You can see my older boys letting their sister play music with them in their little rock band. I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, an almost 5-year-old. And they love their sister. That's easy. If you guys want easy sibling relationships, have a baby girl after having two older boys, because they love her so much and take care of her. But, you know, things have been definitely more of a challenge for me with my older boys and learning how to help them have good, positive relationships. So why is this important? I actually found that there's been some research done on sibling relationships and how this relates long term to mental health. So there's this woman, Susan McHale, at Penn State University, who studies sibling relationships. And her quote is, throughout the lifespan, people who have close sibling relationships have better mental health, better psychological health, and better social relationships, generally speaking. And so this bottom part was a quote that I found that was like referencing her research that she had done. And it said that her research confirms that if siblings have hostile or conflicted relationships when young, it can increase their risk of suffering anxiety, depressive symptoms, and even risky or antisocial behavior later in adolescence. On the other hand, positive sibling relationships can be protective, with warm relationships tied to better social relationships during the teen years. So helping our kids develop positive relationships is actually really important, not just for them now, but for their life, for their ability to be able to have good relationships as they get older. And I work with a lot of students, and one of the things that I feel like I see the most is that mental health issues are a serious problem. People are depressed. They're anxious. This stuff is already on the rise. So if we can do something in the home with our siblings' relationships, then maybe we could potentially help protect our kids against some of these more serious issues and mental health issues as they get older. So what I want to talk about first is the core values that I'm coming from and kind of the basis for how our kids are even going to have positive relationships at home. There's two core values that I think that we have to have in our home if we're going to be able to foster these positive relationships. And it's that we need to love God. Matthew 22:37 says, Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." This is our responsibility. We need to be first modeling this to our kids. We love God because he first loved us. He died for us. He gave his life for us. And so, you know, we have this loving relationship with God. In Joshua 24:15, Joshua says, "But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in the land, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." Joshua is saying, I'm leading my household in this direction. I'm going to model to my kids that God is number one. This is what I'm choosing. You know what? You guys can choose what you want to do, but as for me, this is what I'm going to model, and this is the direction that I'm going to lead my household. And so this is our responsibility as parents. This is our job, is to model this and to lead our kids in this direction. We can't expect Oasis teachers or their school teachers to be the ones who are going to lead our kids to love God. That is your responsibility as a parent. And this has to be the basis. This is our basis for forgiveness. This is our basis to love others, is because God has loved us and shown us forgiveness. So if we want our kids to be able to do this in their relationships with each other, this has to be a basis, a core value that we have in our home. The second one is that we need to love people. We love people because God loved us. Galatians 5:14, "For the entire law was fulfilled in keeping this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. We know that Christ set us free from the burden of the law so that we can love people, not to be selfish, but to love. And so we're modeling to our kids what it looks like to actually love people, make sacrifices, maybe even apologize when we've done something wrong. But this is a model that we're having for our kids, is loving people. John 13, a new commandment I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So these are the two core values that I'm kind of starting with as the basis. Loving God, loving people. This is how we're going to be able to help foster our kids to have positive relationships. This is the basis that I'm coming from. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little case study, and this is where I want to do a lot of discussion. We're going to look at the story of Joseph and his brothers, and we're going to kind of go through, I picked out two kind of characteristics of Joseph, of his brothers, and then of Jacob, the dad. And so as we go through this, the story is way too long to read all the verses, so I put some stuff in, and then I paraphrase some things. But what I want to do is look at some of the qualities, because honestly, this is an antithesis. There is some positive at the end, but this is an antithesis. So we're going to look at some negative qualities, and we're going to talk about why is this trait, if this goes undealt with, what could be the potential consequences for our kids? And so what can we do now to help them? So that's the goal. So be ready. Genesis 37, 2 through 4. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Zilpah. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. All right, I definitely see a couple things come up here. First off, Joseph's a tattletale. He likes to tell on his brothers to his dad what they're doing bad. I don't know if any of you have a kid like that at home. I do. So this is our first thing we see about Joseph. We got a tattletale. We have some favoritism here. This is not even like kind of hidden favoritism. This is just blatant. I'm going to publicly just honor and praise this one kid and give him special things over the others. This is another issue we see. And then the last, his brother's hatred, which is jealousy of Joseph. All right. So now I'm going to do a little paraphrasing. After this incident, Joseph has these two different dreams. He has this dream. He says, listen to this dream. We were out in a field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly, my bundle stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed down low before mine. I don't know if this is bragging, but it could feel like bragging if your brother came and said that to you. And then his second dream, listen, I have had another dream, he said. The sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me. So even at this point, Joseph's dad, Jacob, is like, what? Hey, you should probably be careful about how you're talking about this. Like, this is kind of, you're kind of bragging a little bit. So then his brothers, because of these stories, hated Joseph even more to the point where they plotted his death. They were going to kill him, but they decided instead of killing him to fake his death and sell him into slavery. So no big deal. Okay, so now we're going to look at the different characters, okay? First, we have Joseph. The things I pointed out about Joseph were that he was a tattletale. He's trying to get his brothers in trouble. Why is he doing this? Is he doing it to try to earn favor with his dad? What's the goal here? He's also bragging, thinks that he's the best, maybe putting the other brothers down. You know, definitely arrogant and thinking like, that he's better than everybody else. So I want to try to have a little bit of discussion. Let's talk about the tattletale idea first. Maybe we have a kid who's a tattletale. I definitely have a kid who every time something happens, he's telling me what's happening. Now, this is complicated, right? Because sometimes you want your kids to tell because it's bad what the kid's doing. Other times you're like, can you just stop telling tattling on everything, you know? So let's talk about first, what would be the problems long-term if we don't deal with a kid who's a tattletale, who's always trying to get everybody else in trouble. Okay, we can maybe talk a little bit about the bragging. I was just thinking about this as far as like when we're thinking about the values of loving people, oftentimes the bragging involves putting other people down. And so teaching our kids like how maybe our words affect people. And also maybe this stems from some insecurity that they have in themselves where they feel like they need to kind of brag to make themselves feel better if they're feeling insecure. So it could be good with some of these kind of issues to try to figure out what's underneath this kind of like behavior. Are they feeling like this, jealous of their other sibling, and that's why they're trying to brag to put them down? Okay, so let's look at the brothers. If you have any thoughts about the other ones too, we can talk about that. But we got Joseph's brothers. We see jealousy. They're comparing themselves. They're competitive with Joseph. And this leads to, you know, obviously a really big problem, serious hatred and total disdain for their brother. And their hearts are just angry and bitter. Okay, so let's talk about jealousy. What would be some issues if we do not help our kids when they're dealing with jealousy when they're young? Because maybe some of this jealousy is stemming from like, maybe we aren't giving adequate, maybe they aren't feeling loved by us. Maybe our kids are feeling like they're alienated from us, or that, you know, we're not spending enough quality time. And that could lead to things like jealousy with their siblings. So I think obviously Jacob contributed to this problem pretty heavily by showing such blatant favoritism to Joseph. Clearly treating one child different than the rest. Now, I think for us, most of us are probably not going to be this blatant, but I think there is a legitimate thing that happens. At least I've had this in my household where there are times when one child is maybe more enjoyable and easier to be around than the others. And how do we handle that? Because that's tough. We don't want to play favorites because this leads to all kinds of problems with our kids' relationships. But this could be something we could discuss thinking about Jacob's end. You know, we might have, and there's different stages, you know, at different times of life, kids might be easier. I have a middle school boy and it's really tough at times, but also like when we're one-on-one, it can be very sweet. So I don't know. Let's talk about this favoritism. How could we maybe handle this when we're dealing with kids, different kind of, there are different stages. One's easier maybe to interact with and more enjoyable than the other. This is another aspect of Jacob, is that he was disengaged. I don't know how much Jacob knew about the problems between the siblings at home. He does at one point kind of talk to Joseph and say, you know, hey, you're bragging. You should be careful why you're talking about this. But either he didn't know how jealous and hateful the other brothers were, or he just didn't do anything about it. And so this role of Jacob here is a problem. And I think that as parents, we can tend to either be on this disengaged end of things where we're just not ever stepping in. We're not helping our kids deal with things. We're just kind of letting things go. Or the other end of things where we're hovering. We never want our kids to deal with anything that's difficult. We're stepping in on everything, and we're not actually letting our kids learn how to work things out. I think this is something that's really important for all of us to think about in our parenting, is where are we falling on this? We do not want to be over-engaged where we are micromanaging every aspect of our kids' lives and not allowing them to experience tough, difficult things. We need to let them make mistakes. We need to let them experience hardship. This is how we're going to build resilient adults. And if we are micromanaging and hovering and trying to protect and make sure nothing could go wrong, the real world is going to be a shock for our children. We have to let them experience failure. But we also need to think about, when do I step in? When is it time for me to come in and get involved in this situation? When my kids are punching each other and one's crying, I'm going to step in. This needs to be broken up. We're done with this. But there's other times that I'm like, you guys need to just go outside and try to work this out. And in 5 or 10 minutes, they're playing together and having a great time. A lot of the time, some of these conflict is specifically targeted at you to get your attention, and they're going to do this in front of you to try to manipulate or whatever it is they're seeking. And when we're kind of removing it from us, that can be helpful. On the other hand, if our kid is dealing with serious jealousy where they're hating their sibling, we need to step in. I do not allow the word hate to be said in our house. You are never allowed to say that to your brother, sister, parent. That's unacceptable. And so I draw the line there. There's no way this is happening in my home. We do not say this. This is not how we treat our family, because we have these foundational values of love and loving other people. So I challenge you to think about the engagement that you have with your kids. Are you willing to allow them to experience the difficulty and hardship and pain that is hard for us as parents to watch, but it is so necessary for their character growth as a human? In the end, Joseph ends up in Egypt. He gets in this position of prominence for interpreting a dream for Pharaoh. There's a famine that wrecks the land. And Egypt is prepared because Joseph knew this was coming. And his brothers show up in search of food. You know, this is after he's been sold into slavery. They have no clue what happened to him. I'm sure they probably think he's been dead. He's dead. And there's this scene where Joseph is kind of putting these guys through some trials. And actually, at one point, one of the brothers breaks down and is just like, you know, on his face, because he's like, we have done so much wrong to our brother, not even recognizing that who he actually is repenting to is his brother, who he sold into slavery. And we see this scene where Joseph breaks down, tells his brothers that it's him. And he's like, you know, come closer. And there's this kind of idea of reconciliation and forgiveness. And so both of these characters, Joseph, who was the tattletale bragger, he didn't just all of a sudden become this kind of resilient, forgiving guy. He went through crap. If you read Genesis, I mean, he's in prison. He had to be broken. He had to be brought on his knees before God in humility. And it was probably pretty rough for him. But he got to this point of being able to forgive his brothers for what they did to him. And the brothers, on the other hand, had to recognize the horrible atrocity that they committed to then be able to repent. So there's some lessons here for us. We are all sinners. Joseph, the brothers, the parents all made mistakes, right? We're all sinners. We need to be faced with our mistakes. Our kids need to be faced with their mistakes. That is the only way that we can come under grace. If you're not willing to recognize your sin, you're not going to be able to get under grace. If our kids are not going to be able to recognize the way you treated your brother or your sister was wrong, they're not going to be able to get under grace for that. They're not going to be able to learn what it means to forgive and to repent. We have to let them experience the consequences of their actions at home. Also, God is sovereign. Sometimes we can feel like if I make too many mistakes, my kids are screwed. God is sovereign. He was over this whole situation. He was guiding it. We might make mistakes. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to discipline the wrong child sometimes. We're going to take the wrong stand on something. That's okay. It's going to happen. We're all under grace. God is sovereign. He's in control. We need to also be humble and recognize that and allow him to teach us, allow us to be faced with our mistakes as the parents, and allow our kids to be faced with their mistakes as the siblings so that we can learn. I really think this idea of humility, recognizing our wrong, is really tied to being able to understand the love of God, because our kids will not see that they need that unless they really see that they are sinners and they're messed up. So we talked a lot about negatives. That was an antithesis example there. Hopefully that was helpful. Thanks for the discussion. Great participation. I was just thinking of some positive things that we could do in our houses to foster positive relationships, since that's what we're talking about. Reward and praise positive interactions in serving the family. This means that we need to be observing and watching our kids and seeing, like, when my son goes out of his way to sit down and read a book to his little sister, when the boys are playing really good together, encouraging that. We need to be watching and engaged and really praising the positive things that we see with our kids. Get your kids working together. Here's an example. My kids will play basketball, the two of them, against my husband, Brett. And when they work together on a team, they can beat dad. But when they are yelling at each other and, you suck, you're not doing this right, they always lose. And it's been a really interesting lesson for them, because when they are able to work together and encourage each other and be positive, it's like, you guys work together and you were able to win. Like, see what happens when you can actually not just be yelling and picking at each other. It's actually been a pretty cool thing for them to learn. So finding ways for your kids to work together and do things together where they can succeed. Have fun. We need to have fun with our families all together, with everybody doing fun things together, having the siblings doing fun things together. We need to have fun time. As Mike said, we need to spend quality time, individual quality time with each of our kids on a weekly basis is my recommendation. And we need to learn how to solve conflict. This could be in many different ways. I'm not going to get into a lot of details because we don't have enough time, but helping our kids actually think through, like we would as adults, if someone's coming to you in conflict, how are we going to help that person to resolve it? So doing that with our kids, obviously at different stages of life, it's going to look differently. Like when they're young, taking a deep breath, calming down, let's go try to talk to this person. As they're older, like, how are you going to speak into your brother's life on this issue that happened? Different ways of resolving conflict. Here's one that I don't know if everyone will agree with, but I think we need to have healthy competition and we need to let our kids lose. We actually do this thing at our house where we don't just have the winner, we also actually have an ultimate loser of every game that we play. And it's funny, but I actually think my kids are pretty good at losing. They don't storm out when they lose. They're not rage quitters. They've kind of learned, like, it's okay to lose. You lose sometimes. It's not a big deal. One of the things that, like, my son complains about a lot at school is how whenever a kid loses in sports, they storm off, they scream, they throw fits. And I'm like, let's teach our kids how to lose so that they're not jerks, right? Let's let them lose at home. When they're facing you at something, don't just always let them win, because that's not the real world. We got to let our kids lose. Teach your kids how to apologize, how to recognize, here's what I've done wrong in this situation. I'm sorry for this. And also how to forgive. So this also involves recognizing sometimes I treat my brother wrong or my sister wrong, and they need to forgive me. And so now I need to be willing to extend that same grace to my sibling. And really what Susie said is we have to model biblical values. One of the things that I always tell my kids is people are more important than things. We're not gonna let this object or this toy or this whatever become something that's going to tear our family apart or any relationship apart. People are what's important, not this stuff that we have in our house. So that's one of the values that I try to model. Okay, I'm going to draw a couple conclusions and then we can pray since it's 10:30. I think for us, we got to evaluate what our core values are at home. Are we modeling loving God and loving other people? Our kids are going to see our values and they're going to take their notes from that on what they should value. We need to be under grace. We're going to mess up. It's okay. We have a community. We're all sinners. And I think us being able to even model to our kids, we make mistakes, and I'm sorry, and we're under grace for this, is actually so important for our kids to see. It teaches them that it's okay for them to make mistakes too and come under God's grace. Self-reflection. Where do I need to grow in my parenting? Am I too engaged on every little thing and not letting my kid experience the consequences they need to? Or am I like too aloof and not really engaged in what's happening in their life and not really stepping in on areas that maybe I need to in their lives? And we really need to play the long game. We got to have this long vision ahead. Where do we want to see our kids when they're grown up? What do we want our kids to be like? Do we want them to be able to be people who are humble, who understand God's grace, who can apologize, who can get along well with other people? That's going to mean they're going to have to go through some crap in their life, though. They're going to have to come to a point where they can learn to be humble, where they can learn what it looks like to actually love other people. And that means things are not always going to be easy. And that's why at home, we can really help them with their relationships with their siblings, with us. We're having this vision. Here's what I want. Here's my hope for this kid in the long term, the character that I want them to have. And we need to pray. This should be a capital P because it is important. We need to pray for our kids. God loves our kids. He is so involved with them. And the best thing that we can do for them, for their relationships with their siblings. I have prayed for this. There was a period of time where my younger son was telling me that he felt like he didn't like his brother anymore. And my husband was freaking out. And I was like, we need to calm down. Let's try to, you know, work through this. And we would like pray together, write down positive things about your brother. What's one positive thing you could say? And, you know, sometimes it's harder than others, but we were able to kind of work through this time that was really difficult, where they were like, kind of like, we don't like each other at all and wish that we didn't have a brother. You know, it's going to happen. We don't need to feel like guilty. That's why we need to be under grace. This stuff is going to happen. But what can we do to be engaged when these things are going on? Pray for your kids. Well, Lord, I just want to thank you so much, just that you've blessed us with kids, and that you have blessed us with your grace and your sovereignty, Lord, that you love our kids so much, and you want them to have positive relationships with each other. And you also use a lot of the difficult things in our homes and their relationships to be things that can build their character for the future. Help us, God, as we're dealing with conflict, difficulty, to turn to you for your strength and your guidance, Lord. This is an area we just need to really depend on you to give us wisdom in certain situations, and just, yeah, guiding us daily as we try to love our kids and handle what life throws at us in the best way we can. So thank you, God, just that we're not in this alone. We have an awesome community to parent together. We have you. And we're doing this under grace and perfectly, and that you're behind us, God. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.